we're an analytic society, you know, we know the numbers work, but when it comes to negotiations, that goes out the window.
Well, emotions come in the window.
Okay.
And how our brain reacts. And see, the other thing about being likable that's a strategic advantage is you're also up to 31% smarter in a positive frame of mind. So if I'm likable, you're going to be in a better mood. And not only will you think of better ideas in our negotiation, you'll also be more inclined to put them on the table for me because you were smarter and you like me.
So I'll be smarter because I'm in a better mood.
What's that?
I'll be smarter because I'm in a better mood.
Well, if I smile at you.
Okay.
So I hit your mirror neurons. It's an involuntary response. There's a chemical change in your brain, and your brain capacity actually increases.
It just worked when you smiled at me. All right. So you're seeing some things. Now, the fascinating thing is when they finished, and you talk about this in the book as well, this concept of unknown unknown. So when people go into a deal together and say it's something that's ultra simple, like I'm going to buy something at a store and the price is this and the product is this, and you think there's nothing else to negotiate about, when in fact there's all of this unknown territory that people can cut deals here and there and people can walk out extremely satisfied even if they paid double or extremely unsatisfied even if they sold the product. Kim wants to go back and said, I did this, and Trump wants to go back and I said, and I did this. But talk to me about this concept of these unknown unknowns, because they're motivated by different things, right?
Right. Well, you know, and it comes, it's like, it's really the unknown unknowns are the overlap of the unknowns. Now, what the hell am I talking about when I say that? Yeah. You're hiding cards. Every negotiation, I walk to the table, I get stuff I'm not telling you.
Every negotiation. Even with me and my kid trying to get him to go to bed.
Right.
Right.
Right. There's stuff that you're thinking about that's valuable to you.
Right. And same with him, the kid.
Everybody. Yeah.
Right. So I'm thinking that the last thing I want him to do is bang his head on the ground until it bleeds. So he's got a card on me. And then maybe he's thinking, if dad could just let me watch the movie and go to bed, then I'd be happy to go to bed. And so we both have these maybe unknown areas, I don't know if I'm explaining that right, where if we knew that, we might be able to have power over one another or come to a better deal.
Well, you're always thinking about what's coming in the future, too.
Okay.
Like, you want your kid to go to bed because you want your kid to study, you want your kid to be healthy, you want your kid to, maybe you want your kid to play sports. Maybe you have a vision for where your kid's life is going. Your kid's got another vision, but there's stuff in there there's an overlap of what you, a kid likes sports. Kid wants to be happy. Kid wants things. Maybe the kid wants things in his life that he's already thinking about. As a little kid, he's imagined being an astronaut. You know, who knows what's in their head? But you want to know what's in their head because everybody's got something that where they feel their life is going. You know, what's the future look like? What do I hope for? What do I want to have fun doing?
Okay, so you play about future expectations for both parties.
And then we work our way back.
Okay, not necessarily the present kind of short-term wins. You're talking about kind of the future.
Yeah, why do you want your kid to get a good night's sleep?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Because how it affects the rest of the, how it affects this week, how it affects their schoolwork, how it affects their life, how it affects how they interact with the other kids, how they socialize. I mean, you're always thinking about where is this going, what's going to happen, how is my future being built, whether it's you or your kid.
Okay, so knowing that, when I go into a negotiation with anybody, how can I maximize that knowledge, whether it's about me or the other person involved?
I'm gonna try to tease out what's in your head about your future.
Okay.
You know, and then I need to know what you see in your head and where you see things are going. Okay. And I can't change that until I know what it is. And we've always got an overly negative view because that's the way we're wired. We can't help ourselves. And Daniel Kahneman won the Nobel Peace Prize in behavioral economics for pointing this out to the world, that we're overly negative. And how does that manifest itself? Lost things twice as much as gain. If I take $5 from you, it's going to hurt twice as much as if I give you $5.
Right. Okay.
And in business, 70% of buy decisions are made to avoid loss. But most businesses, I'm pitching your gain. Here's how this is going to benefit you. Here's how you're going to be better off. And your first thought is going to be like, here's what I stand to lose. Mm. And so I go in through that side door, and it's a much faster route because you'll do the deal with me as soon as I get rid of the obstacles. Okay. What are you afraid of? What are you worried about losing? We're talking to an energy company in Texas just a couple weeks ago. They're talking about, and as crazy as it is, they're still discovering new oil fields in Texas. One of the last big oil fields they discovered there was in 2008. I would have thought they stopped discovering oil in Texas 50 years ago. But 2008, one of the biggest oil fields they ever found in Texas. Hmm. What does that mean? That means they're still buying land from Texas landowners. And this Texas landowner is not selling this oil company the rights to his land. And they're following this guy around. They're waiting for him in the gym. I mean, they're trying to show him that they can be trusted. What does that mean? They're trying to overcome mistrust. But they're pitching him with how much money he's going to make every step of the way, which is what every other oil company pitches a guy. And they were just hung around long enough that finally he got the message that they weren't a fly-by-night operation and that he could trust them, and they cut the deal. But if now that they know taking my approach, instead of taking 6 months to get past his mistrust, we can get him past that mistrust in a week.
How?
By saying right off the bat, you know what? We probably seem like everybody else that's pitching you these get-rich schemes. And from your position, we got to be hard to trust because we look like everybody else. Because that's exactly what he's saying in his head.
Right.
And the minute you articulate what's in the other guy's head, then all of a sudden they go like, something about you I like. I don't know what it is. And that's how we get in the side door.
Right. I think you say if you try to call out a negative that's not there, you won't plant it, which is I think you're saying there. But if you try to deny a negative that's not there, then you plant that.
The 2-millimeter shift. And it's crazy because everybody's used to denying negatives. Because that oil guy, if we hadn't taught him, he might have said, you know what, I don't want us to look like everybody else. I don't want you to think that we're like every other salesperson.
Right.
And that's when the guy goes, you're denying it. You must be like them. Right. Otherwise, you wouldn't deny it. The gut reaction is you deny what you're afraid of. But when you say, you know, we probably look like everybody else, then now suddenly I look accountable to you. I look honest. I look fearless to you.
What's the next statement after you say that? We probably look like this big oil company that wants to come in and muscle you over and squeeze you out of a good deal. What's the next line after that?
Well, then it's a little bit of a dance at that point. Right. And my next line is this. I got to shut up. I got to read you. I got to let you react. You're going to tell me one of two things. Either I'm on the right track and you need to hear more of me diffusing the negative, or you're going to relax a little bit and you're going to go like, I don't know. And then you're probably going to say, look, here's what's important to me. Everybody else wants a 99-year lease. You know, I got kids I got to worry about, or I've just opened a trust that I'm moving my assets into. You're going to tell me what you need to make the deal,
okay?
And at that point in time, now the next thing you're going to do is you're going to watch me to see if I actually listen to you.
Right.
There's an article that I saw a few years ago. The guy in charge of marketing for Facebook said he hated dealing with people from Hollywood because they all sit down, they say, what's keeping you up at night? And then don't listen to the answer.
Right.
So
they teed it up perfectly. The guy's about to share the unknown, and they're busy not even listening.
They don't even listen to the
answer. Thinking about their next move, maybe.
Yeah, or they're gonna pitch what they came to pitch no matter what he says.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Talk to me about silence and the use of silence. You just use it there on me.
Right.
But sometimes it's not the right thing to do because people, they react differently to silence, right?
Well, yeah, we got to watch how we react to silence. So some relationship-oriented people, they signal anger by giving somebody the silent treatment. So they will misinterpret silence. And they will say, silence. The other side's mad. They're upset. I got to talk. When in fact, the other side might be trying to think. So silence is a dynamic in order for it to be effective, hence the term effective pause. You got to read the other side in the moment. And so I'll shut up and you're gonna give me massive amounts of information as to how you're reacting. I'm either gonna see a contemplative look on your face, you know, I'm gonna see a go on look on your face, or there's some people that are really good at holding their face but can't hold their hands. Hmm. And we see the highly analytical people will keep a complete stone face, and their hands or their feet will start to move.
Okay. What's the biggest tell for men?
Tell is context.
Okay.
And that's why I need to talk to you long enough to know the context. And what am I talking about there? What I'm really looking for is the way a polygraph works is it's not trying to pick up your tells, it's trying to establish your baseline. What do you look like when you're telling the truth? You're going to lie 15 ways. You're going to tell the truth one way. So my small talk is really designed to get your baseline on what you look like when you're telling the truth. What did you have for breakfast today? You know, what was your commute like in today? You know, how many kids have you got? The stuff that you'll tell, the stuff that the polygrapher asks you a bunch of baseline questions.
Remember, you don't get in life what's fair, you get what you negotiate. If you want to become a better negotiator, click the link in the description below.
And then, anytime you deviate from that, if I say, look, what's really important to you? And you're like,
Does that mean breaking eye contact?
Breaking eye contact, looking in a different direction. Chances are you've probably got at least four different ways that you signal discomfort. Lying is just a means of discomfort. Now, if I get a tell out of you, the other thing I got to do is not go, aha! But what I really got to do
is
I'll
say, negotiation or let me know you know. It just makes everybody uncomfortable.
It makes everybody uncomfortable.
Okay.
But I'll say, seems like something's bothering you. And then you'll tell me.
But it's probably going to be hands related, moving feet or legs, looking away. I mean, there will be some basics. Right.
Right. Right. And we were with a construction company yesterday, and one of their highly analytical guys, his signal is just that his eyebrows come up. Now, when his eyebrows came up, one of the other people in the training misinterpreted that he was insulted. Because we were talking about his particular type and their reaction. And his eyebrows came up, and the other type said, what about that bothered you? Because he thought he was insulted. And he just kind of went, I don't know. And then I came back and I said, seems like you're uncomfortable. And he said, really, I was just really thinking about this. Was somebody told me before, this was one of my big issues. Now, there was two completely different responses there. And I knew somebody asked him a question, he gave a very guarded answer. Now, we need to gather information. I didn't ask him a question. I said, it seems like that made you think about something. It seems like that bothered you. And then, boom, floodgates of truth-telling are opened up by my observation. Because a question put him on guard, where my observation of his reaction sort of bypassed the prefrontal cortex, went in the side door again, and suddenly it's like, well, what he wasn't insulted by was he found it intriguing because he'd gotten some coaching feedback that was one of his issues and he was trying to fix it. And it had been called out in the conversation, and instead of being offended by it, he was actually reacting very positively. So you also have to be concerned about what your interpretation of their tells are. They might be lying. They might be reacting really positively. You got to pull out of them what's going on behind their head without automatically assuming that it meant he was uncomfortable and that was a negative thing. He actually really appreciated the observation.
Okay.
So you got to stay with people in a way that you don't go, aha,
right.
Because then it drives them back.
Are all negotiations really therapy?
Yeah, if you're a great negotiator, because the other side is going to want to talk to you even more. They're going to want to be honest with you. They're going to want to tell you what their unknowns are. They're going to want to tell you, if you're going to want to tell me what you're hiding, it's kind of got to be a therapeutic experience.
Right.
And you're not going to.
And just to be clear, I mean, it's in everyone's interest to kind of open up and show each other the cards? Or it's not like, I'm going to get you and then I'm going to win, but is it really in both parties' interest if they can discover each of their unknowns?
Why not? Because it is, because it depends upon whether or not you take yourself hostage. But first of all, the best deal possible, we both got to show our cards, because we never know how those cards overlap. And we'll never get to the best deal we could possibly make unless we open up. Now, maybe we'll make some acceptable deals. Maybe we'll make survivable deals. But without opening up, we cannot maximize the opportunity. And then that requires trust.